Welcome to the Outsource Accelerator podcast. This is a short format podcast where we explore business and outsourcing mastery. My name is Derek Gallimore, and I am really excited to bring you the leading podcast in outsourcing. Hi, and welcome back. This is episode number 240. So today we are joined by Mitchell Levy of Think Aha. Mitchell is a TEDx speaker and international best-selling author of over 60 books. Why am I talking to Mitchell? Because he outsources all of his operations for his business. He uses a strong team in the Philippines and also people in India. So I wanted to get a perspective of someone who is really living this, who has gone through the ups and downs of business and the outsourcing process. He's certainly mastered it now. And we discuss some of his approaches for managing a team and training a team and onboarding a team. So it's really, really good conversation that I had with Mitchell. I'm sure you will enjoy this, and I'm sure there's a lot to take away. I certainly took a lot away from this chat. So if you want any of the show notes, of course, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/240. Enjoy. Hi, and welcome back, everybody. Today, I'm super excited to be joined by someone a little bit different, a little bit left of center. He's not in directly in the outsourcing industry himself, but he certainly knows the benefits of it and runs a super successful businesses, a number of businesses, and you know, has direct experience of outsourcing. So it's great to have him on the show today. Hi, Mitchell. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, absolute pleasure. And I'll allow you to introduce yourself, but you are the you're the aha guy of Aha That. So what exactly is Aha That, Mitchell?
So we press the easy button for somebody who wants to have a book. So typically we're working with busy, successful executives who recognize the need to have a book, but just have zero time. So over a four-month period, we will ghostwrite, publish, distribute, make the author an Amazon best-selling author, and here's the cool part, they'll spend about 5 hours of time.
Wow, super cool, huh? So it is just, it's taking automation to the next level, really, isn't it?
It's the easy button. We have a lot of, and in your words, we outsource, and I've got a good strong team that I've used, mostly Manila based, some Indian based and some in the US, but we have a nice team and a nice set of processes, and we press the easy button. So think of it this way: we are outsourcing, we're just outsourcing the thought leadership that companies need to create by having books in their people's hands. We're outsourcing that.
Fantastic. And so what do you say then? Obviously you've produced hundreds of books now. You're not a one-show pony. You've done over 800 books. You've launched numerous companies, and you're the best-selling author of 60 books yourself. You obviously need to have processes in place and be able to scale this, because you know otherwise it just wouldn't happen, would it? And so do you sort of see it as a superpower of yours that you are able to build the processes to make this viable as an expandable, scalable business?
So great question. So use the catchphrase superpower. So my real superpower is pulling the genius out of somebody's head. And so what I do particularly well, and of the entire process, it is all outsourced. It's all has a number of team members who are doing different things. The thing that I have reluctantly not outsourced yet is actually that 2-hour interview up front where we're actually pulling the genius out of the expert. And at some point in time where I get way too busy to be able to do that, I've already mapped out the plan, the architecture of creating a certification program where we have other interviewers and 40 identified interviewers. Now, that said, what I've always prided myself to be good at is, and this is why I'll call myself a parallel entrepreneur versus a serial entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. What I've always been good at is I find a problem, I solve it, I document how it gets solved, then I hire other people to actually do it on a repetitive basis. So you don't necessarily want to see me on the repetitive thing, because, you know, like many of us who do those sort of things, I get bored way too quickly. So, by the way, that's why I love doing the interview, because every human is unique. Mm. That said, what was fascinating to me on the outsourcing piece, and I'd say I took a really big dive into outsourcing about 10 years ago. And I met some guy who said, hey, you can outsource. You can, he did the whole ball of wax. So much less money, easy to do, very straightforward. And I made mistakes for the first 8 months. I went through three or four people. I would speak and we'd have weekly conversations, and the person on the other side would say, yep, got it. And the output would be wrong.
Right.
And then I kind of woke up one day, and I don't know if we're in a visual medium. We're not in a visual medium at the moment. We're doing audio. So let me just say that my favorite diagram in the world is a box. So you have imagine having a box. I call that the black box. You have a line going into the black box, call mm-hmm. that input, and a line going out of the black box, call that output. So it's the input-output diagram. It's any system person needs to and has to understand that. So what was interesting is I had this black box, and I had a conversation with the person doing outsourcing for me. And so we provided information for the input. I did not provide information for the black box and did not provide information for the output. So I was getting exactly what I was asking for. Mm. Like, I would talk about verbally what I wanted, but I didn't describe what I expected for the output, how about going about doing it. And I'm like, oh, let's fix that. So what I finally did is said, hey, let's document. And I'm the most simplest way to document using Google Forms. So everything in our process, every step along the way, for instance, if we're doing a cover, we do covers for different styles of books, there's a process. If we're doing interior, if we're doing copy edit, we're doing content layout. So every piece of the book publishing process now is documented. It's in a Google form. And so when we hire somebody new, or even somebody who's part of even something as simple as a naming convention, because when you've published 850 books and you've got tons of moving parts, you got to have a naming convention. Otherwise, things get out of hand. We have a workflow document with the naming convention. And so when somebody doesn't name things properly, we don't have to say, fix it, here's the answer. We say, by the way, please reread the workflow document. And once I started essentially defining the input-output, so the workflow document has, hey, here's the stuff that goes in. The most important thing is here's the stuff that comes out. And then there's a process that goes on in the middle, and then that process is documented. And when you have done that, when you've actually documented your input, your output, and the process of how to do it, now you can go to somebody who's bright and capable but may not have grown up with your culture, may not have grown up with the way you're thinking about things, the way you're trained, the way you were educated, the way you process stuff on a day-to-day basis. When you say a word of what you expected as output, they have a different mindset. That doesn't mean their mindset is wrong. It just means what they think you think are not the same. So if you document input, output, and a process, holy cow. So like I said, it took me about 7 or 8 months. I went through two or three sort of VAs, and I finally found one I liked, but I realized I liked it because I started documenting. And after that, oh man, everything, the gates were opened, and outsourcing's absolutely fabulous. And you have to always remember, in my mind, and actually you and I, in our preliminary conversation, we were talking about something that needs to get done. And you're like, oh, that's easy. And you know what, for the listening audience, you know what Derek did? He walked through the black box. He walked through, oh, here are the steps. Here's the process. Mm-hmm. You go A, B, C, D. Well, all you have to do is you document the steps, you document the process, you then hire somebody to do what you ask them to do. And it doesn't mean there's no variability in that. It means there's still some creativity because you build that into the process. But if you actually define what you want your output to be and you define your input in the process in the middle, you can hire now resources from around the world that is significantly less expensive than, for instance, we have to pay here in the United States.
Yeah, this is such juicy, juicy stuff, actually, Mitchell, because it's exactly the process that a lot of prospective outsourcers or people that are fearing or being apprehensive about outsourcing really go through. So I find it so valuable that you went through that journey yourself, and then you actually came out the other side of that black box yourself and realized that you actually need you need to map these processes. You need to obviously have the input, then define the output and define the processes, which is critical, isn't it? But what do you say, Mitchell, to we get a lot of clients saying, look, I want to hire the best. They need to know what they're doing, because I'm busy. And if you hire maybe a qualified book publisher, they just need to know what to do. So why is there a need of you spending all your time building these processes? Can't these people build the processes themselves?
God, wouldn't that be
I've thrown
beautiful?
down the gauntlet there.
So the answer is, if you have so let's say you hire 100, you outsource and you hire 100 people. Most likely you'll end up keeping, unless you have a really great vetting process, maybe you keep 10% or 15%, right? And of the 10 to 15% of the 100 people, maybe there's one or two who could build a process for you. Let me tell you what I found in different cultures, right? I typically, if I'm programming, I'm either going to Eastern Europe because they're mathematically trained, and they're good at programming, or I'm going to India because, generally speaking, the technology is good. The benefit of Eastern Europe over India is simply I have more better looking code that's being produced. Neither of which by default will produce good documentation. So that's, if you want an output that included documentation, you need to make sure you specify that as an input. When I go to the Philippines, what I'm looking for is the most important thing that's needed for any business to be successful, and it is high-end customer value, high-end customer input, high-end decision to make the customer happy. Now, the customer shouldn't be me. The customer is my customer who I'm working with. And the thing is, when I take an existing process and I share it with somebody and it's well documented, generally speaking, if they follow the process, they got it. When I'm sitting with somebody who hasn't created or done something new yet, it's a 50-50 or maybe a 90-10, 90% opportunity that just conceptually, the brain of the person I'm interacting with, it's just not wired to create new stuff, right? And this is no reflection on anyone in the world, because there's always people who stand out, and I got people on my team who I actually do allow them to create some of the processes themselves. But generally speaking, it requires a one-on-one opportunity where whoever's managing that person to sit with a person. If you're creating a new process, you could definitely do it joint, so you do it together. And once you do it once, here's the cool part. Once you build it together, you do it once, and there's joint ownership. Now what happens is the person on the other side can actually execute that on an ongoing basis, where you, the person who's helping to create it the first time out, you can go on to move to the next thing. And so I think what happens in the US, we end up hiring people at crazy prices, and we say, hey, find a solution for us and solve a problem and build the solution, right? And eventually they turn into something hopefully good, or maybe we train them and they leave and they go somewhere else. Whereas the outsourcing model is we're paying significantly less money. I had one of the people who had working for me who was in the Philippines. She ended up taking the jobs. She ended up taking three jobs of people who are paying five times more each. And she took all three jobs and did them all. I'm like, oh my
You
God,
can get
why?
incredible efficiency here, can't you? Because,
Exactly. Because what happened is the US person didn't follow a process, didn't think it was important. As we moved to the person to fill in, it's like, well, here's the process, here's the input, here's the output, here's what you do. And you know what? It she kept taking on more, which is crazy. And so I think it requires a small mind shift change. And this is, and Derek, this is a good question. If you're sitting in the U.S., whether you're a manager or a VP or a director or a CEO, one of the absolute best things you could do, A, probably the best thing you do in your life is have kids, because if you're a parent, it shows you how to manage other people, right? Because you're not going to go to your 2-year-old son or daughter and yell at them because they're not doing something right. If you want them to do something, you encourage them to do it and you show them how to do it. And you show them enough times and they'll get it, right? Mm-hmm. So the next best thing you could do is take your staff and encourage everyone on your staff to hire somebody and outsource one part of what they do. Could be something really simple, really straightforward, and see whether or not they can efficiently manage somebody who has basically different culture, different mindset, different approach, and see if you can get the output that's appropriate. It's one of the best things when I do consulting at corporations. One of the first things I do is, okay, if we outsource this piece of your job, which, by the way, is really low end. I know you may like doing it, but not a good use of your time. Why don't you try outsourcing it and see what you can do?
Well, it's a good way of learning as well, isn't it? They say the best way to learn is by, you know, see one, do one, teach one. And by the actual act of teaching or delegating or creating a process, then you understand that process a lot better than when you were just kind of blindly doing it without really the conscious awareness. Yeah,
absolutely. And you know what's hard? And I'll just add one more of my favorite catchphrases. For me, when people say to me, what's the best thing you've learned in your business career? And it's to go through life with one mentor and two mentees. So what's fascinating is you can take on people you're working with as mentees. And here's the most important part. Remember that you're going to learn from them as well.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that's the same with outsourcing as well, isn't it? People perceive it as a, you know, these are always going to be people following my commands and following this process. It's not really about that. It's about when someone is new to your organization, there needs to be an onboarding. You need to bring them into your culture, show them the processes so that they understand the way that you work and your product and your clients. But that doesn't mean then, and then, so as you mentioned, you know, you have the inputs, the black box, the outputs, the processes mapped out, but then eventually they become a part of your organization. And, you know, they then, as much as anyone, once they know your product, your client, your business, they can start building the processes themselves so that then they are delegating and this thing organically grows. It's not a, you know, kind of everything will always come back to you as a hub and spoke model. It's more just about properly enabling people during the onboarding and training process so that they are able to succeed. Yeah.
Hear, hear.
Absolutely.
So yes. And, well, yes.
I mean, what do you say? So, okay, so I've got another rebuttal now, but it is interesting, isn't it? That, you know, it took you 7 or 8 months, and very commonly we see people coming and outsourcing and also being very successful in business themselves and thinking that they know how this works and they will very quickly, you know, show the Filipino workforce how things are done efficiently. But actually what you do see is there's a learning process for the client, for the employer, because they have to learn how to process map. They have to learn how to train, how to bring people up to speed in an efficient manner. So there is learning on both sides, isn't there? And throughout every stage of business, it's always this, you know, how am I progressing myself and how am I improving these processes?
Oh, absolutely. And here's the one thing. In the Filipino culture, from my understanding, doesn't – if you're the boss – so I'm the boss. I've got 30-ish people who are working for me, 10 on a very consistent – every month in, month out, they do similar stuff. The other 20 are project by project as things happen. And – the thing that's interesting, those people who I would call my management, the Filipino culture is one in which they don't necessarily want to say no to you.
Correct.
Right? Yeah. They don't necessarily want to say, oh, sorry, we can't do that. And so what you have to do, the same thing's true with Indian programmers, right? You keep adding more scope creep and they keep saying yes. And then when you miss the deadline, they're like, well, you kept giving me more stuff. And the question is, why didn't you stop me? Well, you're the client, right? So the thing is, what you have to do, particularly with those that you want to groom, you don't immediately hire somebody and they become part of your management team. You have to spend time and energy and resources, and you have to provide opportunities where it is easier for them to say no, right? Because they're not ever going to say no to you directly.
Sure.
You need to provide a facility where it's comfortable, where it's okay to make mistakes, where it's okay to not do things right. But, you know, when there's ambiguity, that's where it becomes very difficult for people to make decisions.
Yeah. And again, they will default back to their cultural norms. If you want them to come out and, raise things with you, ask questions, challenge you, that is against their cultural norms. So they have to be in a position of comfort, a position of trust. You know, they have to be feeling comfortable within your culture to do that, you know, and it is,
this is really hard,
Derek, if you invest.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I got so excited.
I let
my team book time on my calendar. I let my clients, if my calendar's open, my clients and prospects can book time on my calendar. It saved me 2 to 3 weeks last year by just using an automated calendar tool. And what happens is for my team, if I am the bottleneck, and by the way, I try my best never to be the bottleneck, but there's an occasional project where I'm the bottleneck. So what I try to do up front and during and after is I try to make sure that whoever's responsible for making sure I get stuff done is to feel comfortable reminding me, booking time on my calendar that says, by the way, Mitchell, if you don't do this tomorrow, we will miss this deadline. Right. And it's that takes a little bit of effort up front. Right. Because that's not natural for people to do. And what you have to do is make sure your organization feels comfortable being able to talk that way. Because a good excuse is not to miss a deadline. There is no good excuse to miss a deadline. You can't say, well, Mitchell, you didn't get to it. Well, I didn't get to it because you didn't remind me in a way that I heard you. Right. But it's not their fault. It's really my fault. I didn't get to it. But if I'm going all over the place, I would like somebody to say, all right, Mitchell, you got a half hour. This is the last half hour you have to do this. Please do this right now. Right. And I look at my calendar. I'm very calendar driven. I'm like, oh, thank you. Right. And I get it done. But you don't start that way. Right.
And I think we're all stronger in teams, aren't we? I mean, you know, there's no company that is just one person, and there's certainly no publicly listed company of just one person. It really needs to be a team effort, and then I think we're stronger as a result. What do you say, though? You know, you and when I counsel and coach people in terms of what to outsource, what are the easier things to outsource, the things that I tend to steer away from or say, you know, do this later, are the things that are either very customer facing, because that is the coal face of your business, and things that are very culturally esoteric or, you know, sort of geographically located. So someone in the Philippines might not know what a fireplace is because they've probably never seen one. But in terms of your, you know, you have a very creative outlet. You're writing books. There's a lot of, I would say, cultural nuances. And this is something that people are very worried about in terms of, sure, it's fine if we save money, but what about the quality? What about the understanding? And, you know, are you sort of banging your head against the wall trying to get this output to a quality that you require? But it seems like you've had no friction in terms of that. What do you say in terms of the cultural awareness and getting your team to produce the output at a quality that you require to obviously wow your customers?
Oh, well, so there's many different forms of output. Let's take a basic one, a book cover, right? A book cover, a book jacket. So what I have to tell you with 100% certainty that I will never, this is now, okay, maybe I should never use the word never, because that's, how about we say, in general, we would not let our Filipino cover designers talk directly with our clients. Just, that's a no-no, right? Because it's for exactly what you said, cultural norms going back and forth, the ability to deliver on time, because generally speaking, graphics people, they don't actually see words. They just see images.
Yeah.
Right. And if you say make it pretty, well, pretty might mean flowers to them. And if you're in the corporate world, flowers are a no-no. Right. So, so we, in that particular case, our cover designer talks directly with an outsourced project manager. The project manager is the one who talks with the clients. Mm. Right. And each step along the way, so when we get to the point where we want to build the cover, we will then we have an email that we send out, and we use an online project management tool. So the email sent out in a project management tool that says, how would you like us? Do you have ideas for the cover? We could base it on your website. We could base it on an idea. We could base it on a picture, or we could base it on a concept. Give us some thoughts on terms of what direction you'd like us to take. Mm. So, you know, most of the time people have a strong opinion. Every now and then when the author says, surprise me, I have no clue. You know, we'll create four, you know, that's when we'll go to our graphics guy. We'll create four or five covers. So we'll have him create four or five covers. We'll send them along, but he may not get it. We may actually, before we send that to the client, we may go back and make a couple changes in their iterations beforehand. And I think the thing, what can you outsource? You can outsource anything that needs to get done where at the end of the day, unless it's completely and well documented, isn't a direct touch point with a client.
Right.
Now, let me rephrase that. We, you know, I was sitting on the board of directors of a public company. We outsourced lead marketing, lead management, but everything there, including the phone calls to the clients and in some cases the closing, was well documented scripts.
Hmm.
Right. So it was very clear in terms of what step needs to happen along the way. So at first, so a good example, you talked about nuance and culture. You know, we have our writers, which are mostly Filipino-based, and I have a writing school that we send them through. Our copy editor and our content editor is U.S.-based, particularly when we have U.S. clients. When we have Australian clients, we look for an Australian base. When we have corporations that do technology, we try to find technology-based, right? Because at the end of the day, you want to make sure that the content is readable by the client. Right. And so you can outsource the initial creation, but then you want to spend a little bit more money and time on making sure copy edit and content edit is done in such a way that it fits the nuance of whoever it is, the customers that you're interacting with.
Yeah. To get that exact, that voice that will resonate with them. Yeah.
I would say, let me just add one more. As much as I would like to find a human, like a web designer.
Hmm.
You know, so our web guy is, we've got actually three or four different web guys. Other than one Filipino, the rest are in India. And what I'd have to say is, generally speaking, you don't want the same thing, the web person to talk directly with your client, right? Because you're in trouble, right? So what happens is you're looking for that project manager who, we have a number of project managers who are Filipino-based. And by the way, just so you know, I'm still looking for more. So always open for ideas and suggestions.
Good. We can hook you up.
Thank you. Looking for that project manager who can take a look at our workflow documents, take a look at what we're doing, understand who the client is, and then when the information comes back from other people who are outsourcing, they're their first line of review. So now when they get really good at it, they could be the first and last line of review unless they just don't think. So the person I've been working with for 8 years, every now and then she says, Mitchell, you know, I think you have to look at this. When I hear that, I know there's something wrong, but she feels uncomfortable talking about it or doesn't feel great. And I'll look at it and I'll pinpoint exactly what needs to get fixed. But if it's normal and it's something she's seen in the past and it's following process, if a client gets upset, that's really okay because they follow the process. And sometimes clients are silly.
And that's still within a sort of norm of the process, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, if it's within the process, then – you basically, you go to the client and go, all right, how can I help you here? Well, this person did blah, blah, blah. Well, that's kind of what they did. They were supposed to do, because that's what you told us to do. How can we fix it? Right. Yeah. And as long as you smile and help people fix it, it's, and what's important in that particular case is not to get mad at the people you outsource if they're following your process.
For sure. For sure.
And of course, if they follow your process and your process is wrong, then the important thing is fix it, the process.
And again, that's invaluable, isn't it? Because that person that's been with you 8 years, they're now far beyond the initial process, and you're building this understanding together. You know how to read each other's communication, you know, and that's yes. really no different to, you know, a standard employment relationship, really, is it? You know, and it's just this benefit of time, benefit of your onboarding, obviously the sort of trust and understanding that's built up between you, and then it just becomes exponentially more efficient, more valuable, more productive. Yeah,
it's beautiful, and we've been working this year on cloning her so that we can have in different areas of life at least 4 or 5 other people who have got to that level, and we're working on that. But I think probably the coolest thing for me is for the first time with this particular employee, I'm actually going to the Philippines, and I'll spend a week with the team. We'll be doing team building exercises. We will, in 2 different cities, we're going to have about 100 people come in, which we're going to talk to, and I'll do a little bit more of the rah-rah. We'll crowdsource a book live, which will basically show people what we do. And my key project manager said, because I let the team build my schedule, and the key project manager said, Mitchell, everyone's taking your time. Can I borrow you for a day so that we could spend time with my family? And I'm, Derek, I'm telling you, I didn't even know, you know, tears came to my eyes, and I'm like, yes, please. Yeah, you know, and but that's really the reason, is the fact that the team feels more like family and wants to have me be part of that. That's just beautiful. I mean, that's really what we're doing.
Yeah, it's a great feeling, isn't it? It's absolutely incredible. And you're right about the, you know, the different roles, different people. You know, it's just like a sports team. There's people have different roles and different purposes, don't they? And you, the coders, you know, and we try and encourage people to segment roles a lot differently than they might in the West, where everyone can do a little bit of everything. In the Philippines or India, the coders, the developers, they're not really going to be very good at sales. And I think it's realizing, you know, who you have on your bus and what they are good at doing. And just being mindful of people's skill sets and then working towards those strengths, as opposed to trying to get people to do a little bit of everything and then, you know, being disappointed when maybe their language skills or their like outgoing personality isn't what you need for that particular role.
Well, absolutely well said.
So thank you so much, Mitchell. It's fascinating learning from you and those real life experiences. And I hope that it is inspiring for other people to just dip their toe in, start with one role, and then see where it takes them, because it's very commonly, from what I see, is a one way path to outsourcing success and liberation in people's businesses. So, and of course, we're going to have to catch up when you're here. But if people want to get in touch with you, Mitchell, how can they do that?
So the best thing you can do is go to a URL. It's just my name, Mitchell Levy, MitchellLevy. That's 3 L's. 360.com. So MitchellLevy360.com. You'll see a customer testimonial. You'll see you could connect to me on social media sites. And if you were interested in booking time on my calendar, you could find time to book. And it's MitchellLevy360.com. So a single place that has similar branding across everything that we do. And we just make it's easy to reach out. And if you're interested in getting your brand out there, becoming the author of a book that's going to help you close more business, that's what we do.
Fantastic. Exciting. I feel like I need to write a book now, Mitchell. That's amazing.
Well, Derek, I'm excited to talk to you about that. And using your services, because they're, we need to, for what I, the company's at the stage where we need to level up. And there's some things that are easy for us to do and things that we're stumbling on. Mm. And I'd love to pick your brain on a couple areas that we're stumbling on.
Fantastic. I am here for you, Mitchell. So thank you so much. And it's been an absolute pleasure and amazing insight into how you build your business.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day, everybody.
Okay, that was Mitchell Levy of Think Aha. If you want to get in touch with Mitchell, then of course go to the show notes, which is at outsourceaccelerator.com/240. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.